You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright
I will tell you right now, that is a beautiful song, and you know how I feel about the flag and what this country has become, but it does not change the fact that that is a beautiful anthem and a work of art by Francis Scott Key. I realize it's incredibly difficult to get excited about or celebrate anything associated with modern-day America, because the country now stands and the government and the institutions of power now stand for everything that is ugly and vile. But when you listen to a song like that, allow your mind to slip back to a time when this nation actually attempted to realize her promise, and it can stir your spirit, because we know what has been taken from us can be restored and taken back. And if you think of Francis Scott Key writing that, the Battle of Fort McHenry, on the ship, watching the explosions to see if the flag was still flying over the fort. I mean, those are the white men that created this nation and carved from the wilderness the United States. And it's a beautiful thing to think back on, if you can think back. But what does the real America represent? Is it that America, or is it what America has become? To help us answer that question is Thomas Steuben, making his debut appearance on the program tonight. Thomas is a veteran, an amateur historian, a political commentator, a hiker, and a contributor to Greg Johnson's Counter Currents. And I thought he would make an especially good fit for this particular broadcast, during which we'll be discussing how American history is European history, is white history, on this 4th of July weekend broadcast. And it's great to have you on the show tonight, Thomas.
Hey, great to be here, everyone. It's my first time here, and it sounds great. And friendly reminder, nation is not state. I know everyone is sometimes black-pilled about the goings-on. That should never dampen our 4th of July. The state is falling apart due to its incompetence and evil. The nation has been beaten down but is rising up. So just stay optimistic, guys. And that is not, as Albert Spengler would say, cowardly optimism. I think it's a very realistic optimism.
No, I really appreciate you saying that. Go ahead.
Yeah. But also say, like, my whole view of America is that we are an extension of Europe, but we are not merely an extension. It's like a branch, but it's not a dead branch. It's a living branch. This country is founded by white people. It is a blossoming of white culture. And this new continent gave us a whole new way to express ourselves and do things. And it actually, I think, gave a second wind to the Faustian impulse. But I'll get into that later. But overall, like, this is a white country. We should be proud of it. our flag is rightfully not liked by the left for a reason. They have a new flag now, which I can't keep track of. It seems to constantly change the new designs and colors added. It's very complicated now. Like, our old flag was complicated enough. I can't stand the new one, but regardless.
Well, that's the thing. Well, that's right. They add more colors. They add more shapes. There's a circle in it now, some triangles. And it's that's the thing about the national anthem is if they hate it that much, it must have some redeeming qualities for us. And there must be something in it that we should be for, Keith.
Well, the traditional America is represented by the old flag and the singing of the national anthem. We are ruled by a small, tiny elite, actually, who are totally divorced from the origins of the American people and the founding stock. And that's the problem that we have, I think, most of all, that we have people ruling us now that have no respect for the founding stock of this nation or the founding principles.
Well, not only do they not respect the founders or our people, they actively seek to destroy us. Well, you had so many interesting takes, Thomas, that I want to take the time to get to. And let's go back to the very beginning, the prehistory of America. And you write that the founding fathers envisioned us, in a way, as a new Rome. Tell us your thoughts on that.
Indeed, they did want to copy history. People oftentimes say those who do not study history are doomed to repeat it. The inverse of that is if you study history, you can repeat the good part. And our founders were surprisingly young, but they're also surprisingly educated. That's something I might discuss later, but they weren't old men. You always see them as these dignified gentlemen. That wasn't really true. These were very virile, aggressive, rambunctious young men who basically formed what would be called like a manor bun, which is this ancient European thing when our ancestors originally invaded Europe. There's a gang of young men who basically went off on adventures. That was what happened, really. We were founded by a manor bun who were well steeped into Greco-Roman history. They were all into books. But unlike the revolution in France, which ended in bloodshed and drama and tragedy, they were a lot more conservative. I know that some people on the right will say, well, they were all liberals, libertarian. They start agreeing with the left while saying we were a proposition nation. That is wrong. I'll explain why. But yeah, they did see us as a new realm. And we even see that in, I think, your home state of Tennessee, there's a copy of the Parthenon. Now, yes, this was built way after the revolution is for Tennessee's centennial celebration. But this speaks to a whole neoclassical element that was woven into American history from the start by the founding fathers. It has a life-size statue of a Pallas Athena in there. All the names of all great cities, especially in the South, are Greco-Roman, like Memphis, Atlanta, you know, it goes to Atlantis and such. But yeah, they definitely wanted a new Rome, and I think they did manage to meme Rome into existence in America. We had the internecine strife with Alexander versus Burr, you know, almost like that was our Romulus and Remus. We had, you know, the unfortunate War of Northern Aggression. And for me, that was for me the Confederate War was our there was this time in Rome when the Gauls invaded from the north. And they besieged the capital. They didn't take the capital, but they wrecked the rest of the city. And the Romans paid them to go away. But then they complained, you're making us pay too much. The Gauls, the barbarians, threw a sword down and said, Vae victus, which means woe to the vanquished. That's what happened in Reconstruction.
Ladies and gentlemen, I couldn't agree with our guest right now, who is our anchor tonight. This is the featured part of our 4th of July festivities here on the air. Thomas Steuben of Countercurrents is with us, and we're going to continue to explore the history of the American experiment and where we go from here with Thomas. Stay tuned. We're just getting started. American Freedom News is your daily one-stop website that will keep you fully informed. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of the big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as it provides truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first and in the historic American nation. Many Americans are finally waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America and Western civilization can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
Do you treasure your liberty? Well, at LovingLiberty.net, we most certainly do. And we want to help protect your liberty, too. Become part of the family. Everyone knows that the core of any society is the family. Therefore, the government should foster and protect the integrity of its family, we the people. Won't you join us as a Loving Liberty sponsor to help us promote the principles in the 5,000-year leap? Let's restore the miracle that changed the world at LovingLiberty.net.
My country tis of thee, sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrims' pride, from every mountain side, their freedom breathe.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is Independence Day weekend, and we've got the patriotic music to match the holiday. But let us remind you of something that is just a cold, hard fact. And we don't want to let facts get in the way of your emotions, or maybe I got that wrong. Maybe we do. There were no women who signed the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution. It was white men, mostly those who fought and died in the American Revolution. There were no black people who signed the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution. It was only white men.
No homosexuals, as far as we know.
Transgendered. The United States was created by white males. The Founding Fathers created a white republic in the Constitution that shaped who could become an American citizen until the 1950s. And American citizenship was based upon whiteness. Now, that is just the way it was. And
let me say this, too. With that song, the only thing I take issue is Land of the Pilgrim's Pride. Unfortunately, the Pilgrim heritage is part of what is bedeviling us today. The Massachusetts Bay Colony was founded basically by the Crown to be a dumping ground for religious crackpots. I think that the people of the South, quite frankly, all of the major thinkers and crafters of the Constitution were from the South. Am I right, Thomas, or not? Let us know.
I think they mostly were, particularly Virginia. Which is really like the heart of the whole revolution was Virginia, and mostly planters, but that's entirely true. And the Puritan element, like, I think I do have some Puritan ancestors. I won't, bag on them too much, but that strain of kind of like this fanaticism, religious fanaticism turned into atheistic fanaticism, I think. We had this day where you have people who have a very religious zealotry about BLM, where they do take what basically is religion, because it is an adherence to an a priori assumption of absolute equality. Black people can do no wrong no matter what. And you even see this phenotype. So I was looking over this American Renaissance article about the founders and how we basically were a white country, and looking at one of the radical abolitionists, her name is Sarah Grimke. She looks like she's 1800s garb, but I could easily see her with blue hair on a college campus, probably as a non-binary.
She looks like she could bite a 10-penny nail in two. They were Southerners, by the way, the Grimke sisters.
We don't claim them, though.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Well, anyway, that's right. Yeah, we've all got the...
We've got nuts, but on the other hand, the crown was absolutely right about New England, because look what happened right after the Revolution. They started going into weird variants of Christianity, like Unitarianism, Universalism, Transcendentalism, Rosicrucianism, things like that. Stuff that is, they were religious crackpots, and they proved it.
Well, anyway, Thomas, getting back to the topic at hand, the founding of this nation, the American experiment, the founding of our country, and did the founders, and you mentioned this American Renaissance article, and we'll dive into that a little more deeply probably in the next segment, but did the founders, and was America intended to reflect a vision more closely aligned with that of our own, or those in control of the levers of institutional power now, I ask you.
Well, absolutely our own, because the founders envisioned a country that was run by a natural aristocracy. What we have right now is an unnatural aristocracy built upon wealth. The founders wanted a natural aristocracy built upon excellence. And that's why we were not a democracy. We were a republic. Republic is Latin from res publica, which means public affair. It's a public thing. It's once you translate to Latin, it's not that fancy, as most things in Latin actually are. But that's why they had a mixed, you know, a mixed government. And we often speak about American project or experiment. It was not a mad science experiment. It was a very thoughtful experiment. They took Plato's Republic and they said, look, you can rule by the one, the few, or the many. But each of those rules has issues. There's usually a corrupt form, and you basically are doomed to slide into corruption sooner or later. So they decided to say, let's take a little bit of each one, mix them together. That's why we have our different levels of government. That's why we had federalism. It's harder to corrupt everything. Now, yes, everything has been corrupted, but that was due to great civilizational things. I had to do industrialization, cities. I could go on and on. And also very, you know, people who are not the founding stock kind of worming their way in and subverting everything. But no, they wanted rule by white men. They wanted rule also by the, they didn't want to, you know, it wasn't meant to be elitist as it looked down your nose, but they wanted the best white men in charge, not just any white men. The suffrage wasn't just white men. It was usually property requirements, heads of households. So right now, the idea that every Tom, Dick, and Harry, who's all different, could create something, it just didn't work. One of their greatest fears was factionalism. That's why they divided the powers. That's why they were so careful about doing this. And they had an idea that there could be some, I want to use this term very carefully, diversity, where it's like, okay, the agricultural interests will clash with the industry in the north and south, but it'll all work out because, you know, conflicting powers compete. They can't destroy themselves. That might be a little bit too optimistic. You had a lot of, I don't know, if you look at the class warfare from ancient Greece during the war between Athens and Sparta, that was pretty bad. And I think we had a resurgence of that with the Civil War. But ultimately, they did pretty good. Like it was still there. It worked. And we are the natural heirs to that vision. The current elites are exactly what the founders feared. I would actually say it's worse than the founders feared, because these are aliens. These are not us. They're usually people who do not reflect the founding stock of the nation. So, yeah, I think a lot of people, when they criticize the founders, they don't realize that the founders got it right. It was just the execution by people who came later that messed everything up.
Yeah, the radical egalitarianism that they want to attribute to the founders of America is basically found either in the French Revolution or maybe the Haitian Revolution of Toussaint Louverture. We did not, in fact, they took great safeguards to protect themselves against mob rule, like you said.
I'll tell you, though, gentlemen, that the Haitians did something that was even superior to what our founders did. And after they had their little revolution where they murdered all of the white people, they put it in there that you could not be a citizen. I mean, it was enshrined in their constitution. You had to be black to be a citizen. And that was one of the things, Thomas, agree or disagree with me here, that our founders...
Said
look, you cannot... take away the valor and the heroism and the gallantry, fighting against those long odds, doing the duty as they saw it. I have a lot of respect and admiration for that. But they were a little bit drunk on the Enlightenment. The whole thing about the Declaration of Independence, all men are created equal, of course, the context of that was a brother's quarrel. Thomas Jefferson wanted everyone to know that they felt equal to King George. In no way whatsoever was he ever intimating that all of the races of mankind were equal. And, of course, we're not a proposition nation, but one of blood and soil like any legitimate nation is.
Well, see, he even admitted in later life correspondence with John Adams that in terms of intelligence and morals and ethics and appearance, that a more correct statement would be that no two men were ever created equal.
And, of course, I think you have to put yourself in their time and circumstance. Never could they have had the foresight to imagine the America that would have existed today. I just, in their worst nightmare, they couldn't have foreseen all of that.
They
no matter
never
how
have imagined a faction of homosexuals. For
but they had. It would have been better if they had made it explicit. It's a white man's country. They didn't. I don't
right.
think they
well,
thought
that's
that
the
they
thing.
Needed to.
It's. I like to spring off of that. It, you know, a fish in the ocean doesn't know what water is. It's not going to remark about the water because it swims in the water. So they didn't. It was like saying the obvious. I'd be, you know, if they say that in the Constitution, be like saying that the sun is hot and water is wet. And they even did put it in indirectly, correct, with, you know, like, for ourselves and our posterity. Well, who is ourselves and our posterity? That's white,
that's
people,
right,
and white kids.
It's understood.
And two, it's like all
it's
the
understood
letters, all the remarks.
Well, it's, yeah, explicit. Like Thomas said, it's actually explicit in what they said.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, I wish they'd have gone as far as Haiti to put it. But at the same time, I mean, you go back to the original Immigration Acts and just, I mean, there's just, well, go back to the Jared Taylor, well, Taylor article that you were referencing. What did the founding fathers really believe? And it's just all the way there up to JFK. They would have all been in lockstep with our positions on these issues. And it was just never in question. It was just obviously.
We took a sharp left in the 60s.
The 1860s or the 1960s?
The 1960s. Well, both of them, actually.
Anyway, back to you, Thomas.
Yeah, and it's just flabbergasting. And what was I going to say? Yes, they were the whole anti-monarchy thing too. There are people, some of the right, who are more traditional, who really get hung up about that and say, "Well, this was a subversive revolution." That's not true, because the founders were ahead of their time. They actually, a lot of the monarchies became very decadent and weak. But a lot of nationalist movements arose in Europe. They had to deal with monarchies. They despised monarchy as much as democracy. They were like, this is a weak system, the monarchs ineffective. And if you look down the road, you had, I forgot which Habsburg, but there are some Habsburgs who was a friend of a guy named Kalergi, and Kalergi, with his clergy plan, wanted to basically mix all the races up in Europe. So look, our supposedly trad monarch went full radical left. So that I think kicking the king out of America ended up being very right-wing instead of left.
Easy to take pot shots in hindsight, however many years after the revolution we are now. What is it? Coming up on 300, right?
Yeah,
later this century.
It is a puzzlement how
hard
we got to where we are. Nobody could have imagined this in 1789.
It's easy to critique them now, but in their time, they did all right. We'll be right back.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
The Biden administration is seeking to block more offshore drilling along the Atlantic and Pacific coasts. The U.S. Oil and Gas Association President Tim Stewart joins Fox News to share his thoughts on this development.
We are behind for sure. The reality is this is the problem with a somewhat schizophrenic energy policy where the president says one thing and the bureaucracy does another.
Meanwhile, Biden faces calls from his own party to do more to curb fossil fuel emissions. Flight delays and cancellations are worsening as the holiday weekend gets underway. The number of delays within, into, or out of the United States jumped to 2,450 alone on Saturday. Nearly 600 flights have been canceled on Saturday as well. The airport seeing the most issues is Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport. This is USA Radio News.
Water. It's essential to life, but it's also something that so many of us here in America take for granted. Imagine how different your life would be without access to clean water in your home. What if you had to walk to the nearest creek, stream, lake, or pond to get water? Suddenly, going to work and school wouldn't be an option because you and your children would have to spend your days collecting water. This is the day-to-day reality of most families living in the world's poorest countries. But what if I told you that you can change that reality for just pennies a day? Through our water projects, Food for the Poor is working to meet the need for water in 17 impoverished countries. But it won't happen without you. Incredibly, it only takes $15 to provide a child access to clean water for life. $15. Decades and decades of access to water for a child. Give the life-changing gift of water now. Just text USA Radio to 91999. Text USA Radio, all one word, to 91999.
An American being held in Russia's trial is underway.
WNBA star and Olympic gold medalist Brittany Griner was accused by a Russian prosecutor of moving a significant amount of cannabis oil during her first appearance in court Friday. U.S. Deputy Chief of Mission Elizabeth Rood outside the Moscow courtroom.
The Russian Federation has wrongfully detained Ms. Griner. Wrongful detention is unacceptable wherever it occurs, and it endangers the safety of everyone traveling, living, working, studying abroad.
Law experts in the United States say Ms. Griner will be found guilty in a Russian court as the judge presents the evidence and does most of the work in the trial. Proceedings will continue Thursday as Brittany faces 10 years in prison. From the West Coast, USA, Radio News Bureau, I'm Lance Pry.
Tesla vehicle deliveries fell quarter over quarter for the first time in more than 2 years. You're listening to USA Radio News.
My name is
When I listen to a song like that, sung by a choir like that, those lyrics were nothing less than inspired. And that is another part of American history and European history and white history that we celebrate this weekend, this Independence Day weekend. And Thomas, this is something that you alluded to. Everything about it, not just our system of government, which is, of course, you look at the Senate, obviously borrowed from the Romans and but not just the system of government, but everything, our literature, our art, our architecture, our...
Everything is refined.
Poetry, and our music.
Everything is so depraved now. How did that happen?
Well, Thomas, you mentioned that we have a copy of the Parthenon, and it is a two-scale model right there in Nashville, Tennessee. It is beautiful. All of that, the technological accomplishments. You wrote this, Thomas, in your notes to me, and I'd like to read it verbatim if you don't mind. Uniquely white, such as electricity, radio, telegraph, our great authors such as Lovecraft and Robert E. Howard, all of it, everything that made America great, everything that was ever good about America, that is our history.
That's white. It came from the white race.
That's right.
Indeed, it's also, we are a nation of blood and soil, and the thing with blood and soil is that they aren't separate. There's a feedback loop, in my opinion. Yes, our blood, our people, shapes the land. We put up our telegraph poles, but the soil also, our environment shaped us. When we came to this continent, we white people, went back to a more primordial state, and we almost had a resurgence of ancient things, a resurgence of literature, of a Faustian spirit. In a way, this was a place where so one of my favorite authors, Oswald Spengler, his opinion was that the Western Faustian culture had died by his time. It's very depressing, but I think America gave it a second wind because the Faustian
classical architecture, for example.
Yeah, it's based upon infinite space. In America, you had infinite space. So that came across even in Art Deco. Art Deco has a lot of harsh lines. It has some squigglies in there. It has harsh lines. If you want a great example of Art Deco, that'd be the Boulder Dam, actually. I think the Chrysler Building, it's a very Great Gatsby feeling, but some of that, you feel a yearning towards a thing that's uniquely white. A lot of these, quote, modern art, there's nothing degenerate about it. It's very much another iteration. You know, white people always have these great art movements, right? It's Baroque, Gothic, Greco-Roman. We always have these, like, things where we just create a new thing, and it's beautiful. And that was something that was not just white, but uniquely a white American thing, was Art Deco. And to me, it just speaks, I love it. I would have every building Art Deco instead of this, like, degenerate, neoliberal, brutalist architecture. It's just like a blob or a big square. But also, if you look at Lovecraft and Robert E. Howard, oh, go ahead.
No. Please finish your thought, and I want to talk to Keith a little bit about architecture because is something.
Lovecraft and Howard weren't just white authors; they were primordial white authors. Lovecraft was very pro-white. I won't go into some of the things he said, but he was definitely pro-white. But he also spoke a lot about fear, and fear is a primordial thing that has always fascinated our people. It's always been there, and I think that he was very much a man of New England, and the New England environment always came out in his books. So yes, he's a man of blood, very nationalistic. But then he also was influenced by his environment. So you have Blood and Soil and Lovecraft. Robert E. Howard, you might know him as the author of the Conan Chronicles. Well, who's Conan? He's basically this ancient, primordial European ancestor from our forgotten age. And he wrote during the Great Depression. He unfortunately ended his life because, you know, all that white privilege he had didn't help him feed his family during the Depression. But Conan was this, we returned to a primordial state, almost like a new Eden. And I think that allowed us to tap into something in our blood and express it. And it wasn't just like those two authors, also electricity, radio, telegraph. These are Faustian things because they extend into infinity. I'd say also flight. We invented flight. That's one of the biggest inventions ever. That was a white boy summer gone wild in the 1800s. No, I don't think anyone else could. Maybe it was early 1900s, but who else could have done that? Who else would say, I'm going to go into space? Everyone else, you know, when, while white people are into extreme sports, and everyone else is why are you jumping off a mountain? Like, why do you fly? It's dangerous. There's no rhyme or reason to it, but it speaks to us. And I think in America, the white impulse is able to find a way to express itself because we had this empty space. We were inspired by our surroundings.
And, of course, its opposition was modernism, which was coming in at the beginning of the 20th century. You had art movements and architectural movements like Dadaism and primitivism and brutalism and whatnot, ugly public buildings, ugly art, things like this. And that was brought over, quite frankly, by, you know, the people in the second great wave of immigration that came over beginning 1890.
Just put a fine point on it.
Okay, the Jewish immigration. Basically, you know, they turned anthropology from a real science into a social science under, under people like Madison Grant and whatnot. It was, totally different from what Franz Boas, the Jewish anthropologist, took it in, and basically they prevailed in all of these things, and they basically, everything they did, like Boasian anthropology, is really motivated by jealousy and hatred of the white Faustian spirit.
Well, Keith, it's actually something that we were talking about very recently. Dostoevsky saying only beauty can save us, or beauty will save the world, I think is exactly what he said.
Beauty is truth, truth is beauty. That is all you know and all you need to know, according to John Keats in Ode to a Grecian Urn.
You give a great tour when we have visiting dignitaries or fans of the shows or financial supporters, whomever it may be, whether it be Philip DeWinter down to just somebody who's passing through. And you give a great tour of Memphis.
I'm a cynic. I'll never forget that one.
We've had a lot. But anyway, I love it when we go to downtown Memphis and you point out the difference in architecture. You have some of these very stately, these classical buildings in downtown Memphis, obviously the courthouse and some of these original government buildings. And then you can go down a few blocks later and you see these postmodernistic monstrosities with the jagged edges and the glass. And it is vulgar. And there is something to this, Thomas. Everything about the left, everything about our enemy is vulgar. From their art to their architecture to their language to their very appearances. And there's something about our people that is very beautiful.
Mores,
very beautiful and strong about our people. There is something there that is worth putting a finger on.
Being preserved and being celebrated.
What is your thought on that, Thomas?
The part of the brain that deals with religion, art, and long-term relationships is the same part of the brain. So I think there is something there where beauty is a spiritual thing. And people who...
Yes.
And love ugliness, there's something wrong about that. And beauty might have subjective interpretations, but there is some objective thing behind it, some numinous force. I'm not, this kind of goes down to like, are you an existentialist? Are you just like a dumb materialist? Or are you an idealist, like a German idealist? And, you know, Europeans, except for, there's been some weird material philosophy that came out of England, but for the most part, our history is entirely idealism. We're into Platonic ideals from the ancient world. The German authors always going on about the idea manifesting in history. And so to celebrate ugliness, it is a form of evil. I think the founder of Ferrari said something along the lines that his morality is based upon beauty, and he usually can't go wrong with that. It's what's beautiful is usually what is godly.
And furthermore, you know, what we had, it's like comparing Helen of Troy to a drag queen.
Well, that's right. I mean, yes, absolutely. What drag queen could launch 1,000 ships? And Thomas, what you said right now, I think, will probably be the highlight of tonight's broadcast. The way you pinpointed that is really worth noting. And yes, I mean, it absolutely permeates to the very soul, what our people produce versus what they produce. You look at the art of the Renaissance, for instance, and compare that to, well, it's like Arlie Ermey said, the actor who played the drill sergeant in Full Metal Jacket, "You're so ugly you could be a modern art masterpiece." That's where we're at today with the left. But it's not just their art, it's not just their architecture, it is their soul. It is everything they want and everything they want for our nation.
We're really
and
kind of a repository. You know, we are lucky in America to be so remote from the rest of the world. We haven't had a war fought on our soil since 1865.
But we're running out of exits down the interstate to which we can flee, and I think at some point we're going to have to turn about and deal with this problem.
Well, we have all the, you know, we're like a repository, like a safe for Western culture, And, of course, that is intolerable to our new ruling elite.
Indeed, and I think they hate us because, well, Spengler, my favorite author, predicted that a new culture cycle would arise in America. So we're not just a repository. We're setting the seeds for a whole new, not just a new national rebirth, but a cultural rebirth. And everyone like complains about, oh, America is so bad right now. That's a good thing because we hit rock. If we hit rock bottom first, we're the first ones through the dark tunnel. We will then leave the rest of the world. We have to go through this bad stuff to get to the end. That's how history works. It's ups and downs. And we have the kind of notorious honor of being in the worst place right now, very culturally degenerate. That means we also will have the first turnaround to fight that degeneracy, to go on the offensive and retake our culture and really probably leave Europe back to its greatness.
I do believe that there will be a dawn. There will be an awakening for our people.
It's always darkest before dawn.
Or before you die. Or before it completely fades to black. But no, listen. We're going to win this thing. I'm not even thinking about anything else. We are going to win. We're going to turn this around. And when we do, folks, the work of people like Thomas Dubin and Countercurrents and perhaps this program and others will be a part of it. We'll be right back.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Why does the left lie constantly? Because they get spiritual power from lying. The lies come from Satan, the father of lies. John 8:44. Here's how the political lying process works. Satan provides the beast with a lie. Then the more they use the lie, the more spiritual power they get. Look, the media is a lie multiplier, and this multiplication gives more evil, spiritual power to the beast, and that can overwhelm and even deceive the body of Christ, especially when the body is being disobedient to the head. The churches today are incorporated, so they're subordinate to human government. They obey the beast and do nothing to restore our national relationship with God. And the government shall be on his shoulders, Isaiah 9:6. That verse is not for the present-day church. Rather, it is for the end-time church, the body of the line of Judah. A message from Christ Kingdom Ministries.
Welcome back to our annual 4th of July extravaganza, the Independence Day spectacular broadcast. And what a great guest making his debut appearance on the program tonight. I will tell you that Thomas Dubin, in my estimation, has checked all of the boxes and has filled every expectation that I thought he might. And it's been a wonderful discussion so far. We've got one more segment with Thomas of Countercurrents and really the work that Greg Johnson is doing at Countercurrents. He's one of the big three, I think, along with Jared Taylor at American Renaissance and, of course, Peter Brimelow, all good friends of ours at VDare.
Don't leave out Kevin McDonald.
Well, Kevin McDonald, yes, TOO, absolutely. Well, I mean, if we start mentioning everybody.
Yeah, we'll be here all night.
Oh, well, that's right. But no, Kevin should actually be in that company as well. And there's so many others that we regularly feature. We don't mean to leave anyone out. But just to point a spotlight on the work going over there at Countercurrents, it is it really is matchless, and it's great work, and there's others that do work as well, but I'm not sure if anybody does it better. So it's always great to work within the Countercurrents family and have some of their contributors on, as we have done in the past, and, of course, known Greg for many, many, many years. But let's talk a little bit more with Thomas first about what is a nation. So a nation, of course, is not defined by political boundaries, but by its people. The Oxford Dictionary define a nation as a large aggregate of people united by common descent, history, culture, or language inhabiting a particular country or territory, end quote. Merriam-Webster's etymology emphasizes birth or common descent. So a nation is not something abstract. It is not an idea.
And this creedal nation nonsense is an invention of neoconservatism, which is a Jewish liberal movement.
It is not a proposition, Keith. By its very definition, it cannot be. We are the people. And we are the only people who can be tricked into suicide of this kind. Belief in the proposition is self-inflicted genocide. I'm reading now from a an article, one of the few articles we recycle every time, every year at this time. This was an American Renaissance article, and the author writes, "The proposition nation is a fraud. We must remain dominant in our ancestral land." So
remember when we had the guy from Desite coming over here, and we took him down to Confederate Park, and he thought he would get no pushback at all about America being a creedal nation, and we set him straight, and that basically caused the scales to fall from his eyes eventually.
Well, I don't think that story that German newspaper that sent a reporter
sent
all the
him
way
over there, yeah, they didn't get the story they wanted, so they deep-sixed it.
Well, Thomas, let's toss it back to you, my friend. You are the featured guest of the program tonight, and this was actually something that was in your talking points. Those who criticize American nationalism forget that the two Americas, you identified this in an article that you wrote, Red versus Blue Patriotism, and I think it'll tie into what is a nation and what is a country and what is a geographical plot and what is a proposition, etc.
Right. So long before our favorite friends came over in the 1960s, around that time, I think we actually began to go downhill with the Gilded Age, because by that time, our countryside was dominated more and more by these large cities. And historically speaking, this isn't just a Oswald Spengler thing, but cities have always been a problem. At some point, they produce industry and culture, but very quickly they become corrupt. It's where smart people go to die. The birth rates plummet. They become degenerate, and then the countryside usually rises up and revitalizes them or just wipes them out. It happened to Rome. It happened to Baghdad. And I don't know, if you look at our modern-day American cities, they've already been conquered by barbarians that hauled out. Like, they're the abode of snakes and foxes like Chicago. But a lot of that is that our people are the land. They're not urbanites. They're a nation can live in a city, but cities usually kill the nation. And that's why I think the Civil War was so brutal, was the underlying issue there. There were a lot of issues, but I think it was an urban versus rural conflict, which has been always throughout history. And our blood and soil is real. The people are here, and these kind of urbanite elites took over the country. And they've always been a problem. They've always kind of despised us. These like East Coast people with their Hamptons and their champagne, and they're just above it all. They think they can just like, you know, tank the stock market and cause the Great Depression. It's been going on a long time. It was way before the 60s. The 60s, of course, had some newcomers come in and, you know, exacerbate this issue. But we and them are not the same. In fact, they despise us. Whenever you see a liberal with an American flag, you need to think of a Greek with a wooden horse. They're waving that to you to make you do their bidding, but they actually hate the flag and they hate you.
Yeah, they really started to come over in the 1890s, and they were, that's where it started. But, look at Agenda 21. They want to reduce the human population of Earth to 25% of what it is now, and they want us all living in cities, and they want us to depopulate the rural areas. And, of course, the rural areas is what everything good and righteous comes from.
That's actually something, Thomas, that somebody told me. I was 22 years old, and I was running for a seat in the state legislature. And in my defeat, this radio program was born. But somebody told me, he said, the greatest divide isn't conservative versus liberal. It's rural versus urban. And he was right.
It is just like even Spunger said, all great cultures are town cultures. Once you stop being a town and you become a city, it just goes downhill. It's horrible. And they've always have despised us. Like you've seen white men packed like sardines into these big cities and exploit. Like people complain about slavery all the time. Well, where's my reparations? You know, our white ancestors had to work their tush off in these factories and coal mines. Like a factory worker in the North during the Gilded Age, it wasn't pretty. And it was a thing where they did, you know, they looked down their noses and they wanted to like gobble up the countryside, kick us off our land. It was bad. It happened throughout history and it's happening again. But, you know, eventually things work out and there's a swing back and the laws of nature reassert themselves.
And that's what we're counting on. You know, we talked about this last week with one of our guests that history, the arc of history is long, he said, but it eventually comes back to reaction. And so I have never thought that we would just continue down the current course uninterrupted, that the path would be a never-ending march to perdition. I always have felt that this would change, and I believe now that we actually may live long enough to see the balkanization of America, which I do hope happens. I do hope that happens. I want to read one more thing and then toss it to you for a final word. And this is, again, from the article by Jared Taylor, our good friend, who has, of course, written many years ago now, but it's something that we repost every year at this time. What did the Founding Fathers really believe? And I'll just read the opening and ending paragraph of his summation. Since early colonial times and until just a few decades ago, virtually all whites believed race was a fundamental aspect of individual and group identity. They believed people of different races had different temperaments and abilities and built markedly different societies. They believed that only the people of European stock could maintain a society in which they would wish to live, and they strongly opposed miscegenation. For more than 300 years, therefore, American policy reflected a consensus on race that was the very opposite of what prevails today. Jared closes with this, and you can read the entire piece in many different places. Just Google Jared Taylor, what the Founding Fathers really believed. As recent a president as Dwight Eisenhower argued that although it might be necessary to grant blacks certain political rights, this did not mean social equality or that one should court his daughter. It is only with John Kennedy that we finally find a president whose conception of race begins to be acceptable by today's standards. Today's egalitarians are therefore radical dissenters from the traditional American thinking. The conception of America as a nation of people with common values, culture, and heritage is far more faithful to the vision of the founders.
So, John Jay's band of brothers.
That said, Thomas, I want to give you the opportunity to work in something about your favorite president. Tell us who he is and why he's your favorite.
Yes, I will. My favorite president is the one, the only, Teddy Roosevelt, even though he hated being called Teddy. He was, I think, the quintessential American, the great kind of like Titan who even surpassed the Founding Fathers to some extent. He got everything that a conservative, I mean a real conservative, would want. For example, he had into conservationism. And it basically is this dichotomy of blood and soil where Europeans are kind of unique, where we don't just trash the environment. We aren't like China or Africa, where they're home to all the rivers that pollute the ocean. We actually care for the environment, try to manage it constructively. For example, in the supposed Dark Ages, we whites were constructively managing our forests so that they could be more useful for a variety of reasons and we wouldn't destroy them. That was when we were supposedly savages or something. So we had Teddy Roosevelt going on the conservation thing. Also, he was a warrior. Like Nietzsche, he was debilitated by a bunch of health problems, but he decided to, instead of crying his safe space or get victim points, he subjected himself to a warrior, strenuous lifestyle, and he ended up being a conqueror. He liberated/conquered Cuba with his Rough Riders. He also very early on wrote a book about the War of 1812 and about sea power. So already he had a strategic military vision very young. He was a genius. He was physically active. He also, a lot of white men are getting to like, you know, modern like combatives, like boxing and all that. He was into jiu-jitsu because he saw that we were going to go probably to war with Japan sooner or later. His idea is not just about guns. We're going to have people who are aggressive. So let's get them into like martial arts. Let's teach them jiu-jitsu. So no one knows that Teddy Roosevelt was like kind of the ninja. He was teaching our people jiu-jitsu. So all around, he was basically the paragon of what a white man should be. He's, you know, very well-read, but also very physically aggressive. And he also
cared for his people. Let me ask you about this too, Thomas. No, go ahead.
Seconds remaining.
Yeah. He was also a populist. He also passed the Clean Food and Drug Act, which I think we need another one, getting rid of our seed oils. I'm sure he'd be opposed to that. But he was overall, despite being this pinnacle of what means to be white, he was still a populist who lived for his people. But
well, this is why the great Sam Dixon always – absolutely, as late as the Roosevelt era – he was proud to be white, and I agree with you that he's one of our champions. And this is what Sam Dixon always talks about, not getting wrapped up in the terms of conservative and liberal, because, hey, environmentalism could be our issue, too. It was Teddy's issue, and there is nothing at odds with safeguarding, being good stewards of our environment, and also being pro-white. Keith,
as a good Southerner, I would like to throw a vote in for James K. Polk, who had three goals, accomplished all of them, and basically doubled the size of the United States in one term.
Thomas Steuben of Countercurrents, a fantastic debut appearance, my friend. I hope you will come back and be a regular with us. I really enjoyed it. You made this Independence Day broadcast very special and memorable for me, even after all these years. Counter-currents.com. Thomas, we'll talk to you again soon. Thank you again, and have a great rest of your holiday weekend.
Happy 4th.
You too.
Third and final hour coming up next.